Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, what up? They eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta you show me if necessary. Homie, vestas is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind, the beauty of life. Was when my mom said, if you could be Christ, I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training in difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The army's a school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish scales, the cops, none. The time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holsters. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. A black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake, go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new Huey
Newton. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force of what we fight for. My heart goes to you, beautiful wife in war.
Enlist and more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule is strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
damn way it hurts.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Free Land, Revolutionary Greetings. Welcome to this radio. I'm your host, Mike Secure, and I go to fivefold.
My first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners.
My second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. My third goal is to transfer the criminal past the new African mentality. My fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of the new African community. My fifth goal, create a new African prison for release, producing new African citizenship. My overall goal, transferring the whole prison industrial slave complex to the big interest liner by transferring the prison industrial slave, by transferring the criminal time to the revolutionary time on educational means. Before I bring on a guest tonight, I'd like to go over a couple of events happening in history during this week. On January 9th, 1866, Fisk University was established in Tennessee. Rush University College was established in Mississippi. And Lincoln was established in Missouri, and also as well. In 1922, the world witnessed the birth of Sekou Touré, who the president of Guyana, Africa. He also won the founders of the African Revolutionary Party, the overall revolutionary. In 1946, poet Kathy Cullen died in New York City at the age of 42 in 1967. Representative Adam Clayton Powell Jr. was ousted as chairman of the House of Education and Welfare Committee on a charge of wrongfully appropriating congressional funds. Powell accused his critics of racism. In 1976, Lester B. Granger, former director of the National Urban League, died in Alexandria, Louisiana at the age of 79. In 1981, the Labor Department announced that black unemployment rate in December 1980, was 14%. On January 10, 1849, Congressman Abraham Lincoln proposed but never introduced a bill calling for a future slave law in the District of Columbia and a gradual emancipating the slaves of the district. He was bitterly criticized for proposing to extend the future slave law to the nation's capital. In 1870, Georgia legislature reconvened and admitted black representatives and senators. 1897, Amy Ashbury Garber was born in Port Antonio, Jamaica. She was a co-founder of the University of Negro Improvement Association African Community League, along with Mark Marcel Garvey. And also, she's an author of a lot of books and writing documents pertaining to Mark Garvey. In 1947, Mama Phoenix Shakir, a Black Panther leader, political activist, lecturer, building one, also a kind of new African citizen, was born. In 1966, Julian Bond, communication director of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, denied a seat in lower house of the Georgia Legislature because of the opposition to the Vietnam War. In 1972, the 10th through the 12th, two black youth and two deputy sheriffs killed during racial disturbance in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. In 1992, Dennis Greed, Stanford University football coach, named coach of Minnesota Vikings and became the second black coach in the NFL in modern era. In 2005, James Foreman, executive secretary of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, from 1961-1966, died at the age of 76 in Washington, D.C. Okay. On January 11, 1862, Lincoln for the resignation of the Secretary of War, Simon Cameron, who had distributed a report calling for the use of black soldiers. President Lincoln repudiated the suggestion and ordered all copies of the report recalled. 1870, the first Reconstruction legislature met in Jackson, Mississippi. 31 of 100 seat representatives were black. 533 senators were black. 1892, William D. McCord of Indiana was appointed minister to Liberia. In 1936, Charles W. Anderson in the lower house of the Kentucky legislature. In 1961, a riot took place at the University of Georgia. Two black students, Charlene Hunter and Hamilton Holmes, were suspended, but a federal court ordered them reinstated. They returned to class on January 16th.
also Charlene Hunter wrote a book in regard to the situation. Okay, in 1989. The National Collegiate Athletic Association approved a new rule, Proposition 42, that eliminated athletic scholarships for freshmen who did not meet minimum academic standards. Critics said that the proposition and the standard test used to qualify students were racially based, were racially biased. Okay. Now, today's date, in 1948, U.S. Supreme Court decision, Spiral versus Oklahoma State Board of Regents, said the state must afford blacks an opportunity to commence the study of law at the state institution at the same time as other citizens. Also on this date, Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad was born, who's a leader in the Nation of Islam, a spokesman of Nation of Islam, also a leader in the new Black Panther Party, the self-defense, and an overall pan-African revolutionary, as well as a continued African citizen. In 1952, University of Tennessee admitted first black students. 1965, playwright Lorraine B. Hatchberry, the author of Raising the Sun, was born. She returned to essence. In 1970, the secessionist to Biafra province surrendered in the 31-month-old Nigerian Civil War. On January 13, 1869, the National Convention of Black Leaders met in Washington, D.C. Fred Judd was elected president. In 1873, PBS Pinchback relinquished the office of governor, saying that at the inauguration of the new Louisiana governor, I now had the honor to formally surrender the office of governor with the hope that you will administer the government in the interests of all people and that your administration will be as fair toward the class that I represent as mine has been toward the class represented by you. In 1985, Jerome Holland, the first black on the New York Exchange Board of Directors, died in New York City at the age of 69. In 1989, poet Sterling A. Brown died in Tacoma Park, Maryland at the age of 87. In 1990, L. Dudley Wilder of Virginia sworn in as the first elected black governor of the United States. Okay, on January 14th. South Carolina Constitutional Convention, the first official assembly in the West with a black majority, met in Charleston Clubhouse with 76 black delegates and 48 white delegates. Two-thirds of the black delegates were former slaves. A New York Herald reporter wrote, here in Charleston is being enacted the most incredible, hopeful, yet unbelievable experiment in all the history of mankind. Said it was an experiment. 1868, North Carolina Constitutional Convention. 15 black, 118 white met in Raleigh. 1873, PBS Pinchback elected to U.S. Senate. Since he had previously been elected to Congress, he went to Washington with a unique distinction of being both a senator-elect and a congressman-elect. In 1975, William C. Coleman, named Secretary of Transportation by President Ford. He was the second black to hold a cabinet position. In 1981, James Franck, President of Lincoln University, Missouri, installed the first black president of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, NCAA. I go back 1937 on January 14th. Baba Sumnata Okolo was born, who was a kind of new African citizen in the AFPOW, former of the Black Panther Party member, former of the Black Liberation Army, and also a political prisoner. Right now, currently, he's incarcerated and involved need our help and liberation. There's a couple of petitions online. You can Google it now and find a petition, sign a petition, and sponsor help for the brother. Okay, on January 15th, 1865, the Black Division under command of Major General Charles Payne participated in Fort Fisher, North Carolina expedition, the Colored Confederate's last major part.
In 1929, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., great freedom fighter, civil rights advocate, was born in Atlanta. He referred to given the name of Michael Luther King Jr. The name was formally changed to Martin Luther King Jr. at a later date. 1941, Yancey Williams, Howard University student, asked a federal court to order the Secretary of War, an upper government official, consider his application for enlistment in Army Air Corps as a flying cadet. In 1950, the 15th through the 17th, more than 4,000 delegates from 100 national organizations attended the National Emergency Civil Rights Conference in Washington, D.C. In 1966, from the 15th through the 17th as well, the Army revolted and deposed the Nigerian government. The body of Prime Minister Sir Abubakar Tabawa Balewa was found on January 21st. Igbo General J. Agia RDC becomes president. In 1977, the Second World Festival of Black and African Art, FESTAC, opened in Lagos, Nigeria. The largest delegation outside Nigeria came from America. The festival continued until February 12, 1983. Black Panther Party member Lorenzo Kumbaya Irvin released from prison.
So those couple of events happened in history this week.
We know more. There were just a couple of them. I would say Freeline that was identified land, revolutionary ingredients, three out of captured African citizens, new African political prisoners, new African POW, three out of political prisoners. I would salute all the ones who educate themselves behind enemy lines, salute all the ones who educate themselves on the street, the constantly doing working in the community and better themselves and individuals. And I'd like to bring up welcome to the show tonight, Brother Kamal Ascari, aka Sco Able. How you doing, good brother? Revolutionary Green. How you doing, bro?
How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm standing firm.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. First, I'd like to thank you for coming to our platform to show you now that we understand it, man, with us, you know, and it's also encouraging you, brother, pushing forward.
Okay.
Indeed, brother. And also, before we get into that, man, tell a few about yourself, man. How you grew up, man. You know, how you grew up, how you came up. Tell a few about yourself, man. Just a little bit. You know, a little brief about yourself.
I was actually born on the west side of Charlotte. You know, the Wilmore community. You know, is off West Boulevard. People from Charlotte, they pretty much familiar with that area. You know, and it's an urban community, you know, high crime, things of that nature. My parents moved out coming from South Carolina and moved from Wilmore and went to Kenny Street, you know, and from there back to Wilmore, then to Hidden Valley. But, you know, when I was in Wilmore is when I really got my first taste of, like, street life, because my father, he took me everywhere he went. I'm talking about liquor houses, wherever he was at, I was there, you know, so I seen a lot of prostitution, you know, a lot of, you know, street stuff, you know. And we ended up moving in Hidden Valley like in 80, I say around 87, around 87, 88, around in that time. And by 89, man, I was off the porch just, you know, full-fledged in the streets. But now that I'm older, you know, I feel like, you know, I made a transition, but, you know, for the best. But, you know, I learned a lot in that neighborhood, Hidden Valley. I ain't really learned too much in the neighborhood that I actually was born at, because I wasn't there but a short period, actually. But Hidden Valley is where I actually grew up, you know, from, like, the age 9, you know, up to now I'm 43, you know. And that neighborhood pretty much, it molded me and, you know, made me. And, you know, as a youngin', my dad caught a murder charge and he had to flee to New York, and we ended up going up there so we can visit him on Rackers Island. And when I was in New York, I believe that was in like 86, is when I first heard about the 5%ers, you know. And I was just a little kid and I was with my older cousin and we were standing under the bridge in Harlem, under the L bridge, the L train. And one of his partners, he kept saying he was God, But I'm thinking he's saying he a guard. You know what I'm saying? So I ain't think nothing of it. But that was the first time I actually heard about the Nation of Gods and Earths. But it wasn't Nation of Gods and Earths. It was always 5%ers. You know what I'm saying? I didn't really learn about the Nation of Gods and Earths until I got real deep into the 5% nation, you know. And I finally embraced the 5% nation in like 91 when I was like 13. And I came across it when I was incarcerated in a juvenile facility. And there was a cat in there from New York. And, you know, he knew the alphabets. That was about all he knew. And he ended up giving me the alphabets. But come to find out later on, them alphabets wasn't writing exact, you know. And I studied the 5% nation up till from age 13. But I'm really still studying it now, you know, but I'm not really wholehearted into it due to a different change of events and the way my different paths I took in as far as dealing with, you know, the New African Revolutionary Nationalism as far as elevating my people up out of oppression. So it was a contradiction as far as the ideologies, you know what I'm saying? But I still, you know, acknowledge the Nation of Gods and Earths because that's my foundation as far as me when I started my conscious travels, you know what I'm saying? So I always give the Nation of Gods and Earths my utmost respect. And a lot of times, even when I'm having dialogues, I find myself going back to these very same lessons that I learned while I was part of the Nation of Gods and Earths. You know, and those that's familiar with that, you know, that's the mathematics, the alphabets, you know, student enrollment 1 to 10, the 1 to 36, 1 to 14, 1 to 40, actual facts, solar facts, you know, that's called 120 because it's 120 degrees, but it's actually 122 degrees, but two of those degrees repeat itself, so we don't count. But, you know, I studied that. I got more into the Nation of Gods and Earths when I had ended up going to Morganton High Rise in Morganton, North Carolina. It's like a youth facility from the age of like 15 to 21, you know. And when I got there, I'm talking about it was literally like 700 to 800 guards. Anybody that was in the Morganton High Rise between the years of 93 and 97, to tell you, man, it was like hundreds of guards there, you know. And that's when I started, you know, my journey and whatnot. But once I got to the feds in like the mid-90s, that's when I really, you know, I finally acknowledged my 20. You know what I'm saying? I acknowledged all my lessons and whatnot, and I even started taking on students, you know. But, yeah, man, that was, you know, my life coming up as far as on the conscious level. Even though I had knowledge of self, I was still in the streets doing things that a savage would do. You know, and it was worse because I had knowledge of self, you know, but I didn't quite really understand the lessons that I had, because you got to understand, I got knowledge of self as a kid, you know what I'm saying? And back in them days, you know, a lot of the guards was carrying it like a game, you know, because we had plenty of UBDs, universal beatdowns, you know, when individuals, you know, would stand with what you call a cipher. Cyphers 360 degrees where guards are coming, stand in a circle, and we build on the lessons. You know, it was so crucial back then. Like, you stumble on a lesson, man, you're getting punched in the jaw. You know what I'm saying? And it was serious like that, you know, and I came up in that era. But that wasn't right in the Zach within itself. You know what I'm saying? As I got older and got deep into the lessons, you know what I'm saying, you don't put your hands on your ear like, you know what I'm saying, unless you want to send them back to the essence.
Yeah.
You know, but as time went on, you know, like I said, I was running the streets and, you know, had knowledge of self, but I had the knowledge, but I didn't have the understanding. Understanding is the best part, you see, and I didn't have that understanding, so I was still, you know, dealing in devilishment, you know what I'm saying, negativity, you know, and throughout that whole process, man, it was a learning experience. You know, but my real true education came about when I got into the feds, you know what I'm saying? And I met this brother, man, a beautiful brother. And, you know, the brother took me in. I was at Pollock USP. And this was like in the early 2000s. And this brother, he was part of a particular revolutionary movement, you know. And You know, he took the liking to me, and, you know, I was hanging with this brother, man. He was an older brother, man, and he was real humble, you know what I'm saying? But I noticed a lot of people respected this brother on the compound. So, you know, one day the brother actually, after we'd been hanging together for about 7 months, the brother finally told me, you know, his political ideas, his ideology, what he stands for, what he represents, you know what I'm saying? And he was telling me he liked the way I conduct myself, and, you know, he had been studying me for these, you know, past few months and whatnot. But that's when I started my training course as far as dealing with, you know, the new African struggle and understanding, you know, the prison movement and, you know, getting knowledge about the Black Panther Party, the, you know, the Black Liberation Army and things of that nature. And unfortunately, I didn't grasp that, you know, in its entirety, you know what I'm saying? And as time went on, you know, I met other brothers, you know, that traveled the same path that this brother had shared his life upon me with. And these brothers started, you know, teaching me and educating me on certain things. So now I'm getting a better understanding, you know, and now I know everything that was being taught to me. I now got to use these tools, man, to try to give it to the youth so they won't have to go through what I went through, you know. And hopefully if you know, if I can just reach one, then, you know, I did my job, each one teach one, you know. And throughout these years, man, I realized that the only way that we can get these kids out these gangs, or at least get these so-called gangs, I got to call them street organizations, but, you know, these so-called gangs, the only way we can actually reach these youths, man, you know, is actually, they're not strong-minded. You have to go to their shot callers, man. You have to go to their OGs, you know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, you know, they subordinate to their OGs. They loyalty is to their, you know, they big homies. They loyalty ain't, you know, to the individual that's trying to teach you. You know what I'm saying? So you got to try to reach the leaders. And if you can get the leaders and educate the leaders and you know, kind of bend their minds, you know, more towards, you know, our ideology or the new African movement, then we can pretty much get a grip on the organization itself. You see what I'm saying? Because just trying to talk to a youth that's part of an organization that he really ain't got no say-so in, you know, that can be detrimental for him, you know, to an extent, depending on who his big homie is. Because I done ran into a lot of OGs and street organizations that's conscious, you know what I'm saying? And they don't allow the young homies to get into, you know, nonsense. But still and all, you have to, like, reach out to these leaders that is doing that and you know, teach them. And that's the only way you can reach the youth. And that's what I've been doing in my city. You know what I'm saying? I talk to, you know, the shot callers of the different street organizations, and I try to educate them and bend their minds a little bit to lean more towards the new African ideology. You know what I'm saying? It's a process. It's going to take time, but it's coming. You know what I'm saying? And have other things in the making as far as Stop the Violence that I'm doing with someone else, but I'm going to talk about that later on, because that right there is still in the making, though.
Okay. Well, one thing I want to ask you, what was your experience as a youth going into the junior? What was your experience? You know what I'm saying? How did it affect you? How did it affect you right now in your life? And what are some of the things you can go back into that situation to enlighten others with right now?
I mean, to be honest, I was numb to the situation. You know what I'm saying? But to be truthful, I think, like, the first time that I actually, probably the only time that I actually felt something, I was incarcerated. I was 14. I was charged with murder. Well, I was charged with multiple murders. And when my mom and my sisters and them came to visit me, they had me in a juvenile detention center down in Gaston County. I forgot the name of that detention center, but I knew it was in Gaston County. And my sister and them came to visit me, and when they left, in my room, it was a hole in the window, And I called out to my baby sister, Rosie, and she seen me. So she was like, Mom, they go Trey. Because that's my nickname, my middle name, Trey. So everybody started sneaking towards the window, and I seen my baby sister cry. She was young at the time, about 6, 7. And me seeing her cry because of me being incarcerated was like, it brought tears to my eyes. And that was the first time I actually felt something being incarcerated, you know. But as soon as it came, it left. But I felt something at that moment, you know. And I ended up, you know, beating 3 of the charges and was found guilty on 1. And I was sent away, and I did like 5 years. But the time that I was in that youth spread, man, it was like, that was a crazy experience, because you got to fight basically almost every day in there, because you got to realize you're dealing with teenagers. You ain't dealing with grown men that are trying to show you some form of respect. You see what I'm saying? You're dealing with a bunch of kids, 13, 4-year-olds, 14-year-olds, and we in there for murders. You see what I'm saying? That's the mentality of the individuals that surround you, because, you know, in Carolina, when I was growing up, those that had serious charges, they always put us in, like, one category in one certain training school. You know what I'm saying? I was at C.A. Dillon Training School, which was considered, like, maximum juvenile. And, you know, that experience in itself, it taught me a lot of things, too. You know what I'm saying? It taught me how to survive. You know what I'm saying? It taught me how to understand my environment. It taught me how to be a people's person when I need to be, how to communicate with individuals, you know what I'm saying, when I have to be able to communicate with them. But psychologically, it just numbed me. And I don't know if I did that as a child and just don't remember, that I you know, tricked myself into accepting it for what it is, you know, but it didn't bother me, comrade, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, because like I said, I've been incarcerated all my life. You know what I'm saying? I'm 43 years old, and I probably done did about 27 years in prison. And that's a bad thing, because I didn't learn how to drive a car until I was 25. You see what I'm saying? I ain't know how to drive a car until I was 25. And there's a lot of things that I didn't, like making up my bed, simple things like that. I ain't know how to make up a bed. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how to cook. I still don't know how to cook. You know what I'm saying? And that all come from, you know, being incarcerated, man, and, you know, being in that situation, man, it takes away, you know, a lot. And it took away my childhood. You know what I'm saying? I didn't really have a childhood. I spent my childhood incarcerated. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't play with video games or play sports, or, you know, I can't play no sports. You know, but I was good at one thing, doing backflips, you know what I'm saying? But that's not really a sport, you know, but yeah, my childhood was incarcerated, man. You know what I'm saying? So I can't really talk about childhood unless it's dealing with incarceration, you know. And like I said, that was an experience, you know. And it kind of messed with your mind to an extent, until you're able to become numb with it. But psychologically, for those like with the weak minds, because, you know, by nature, it's not fit for man to be in isolation, to be captured. You know what I'm saying? That's not natural. That's not normal. You see what I'm saying? So anybody that's in that environment, man, you know, they're going to suffer, you know, PTSD and things of that nature. But like I said, I had to become numb to it, you know, and I had to become more of a predator as opposed to a prey. You know what I'm saying? Because when I first went in there, you know, people looked at me as a prey. You know what I'm saying? And they tried to prey on me. But I had to stand firm and hold my ground and fight back and survive. You know what I'm saying? But it also turns you into an animal. It turns you into a monster. You know what I'm saying? Because you got to survive, and you in there with a bunch of hard-headed juveniles that don't got no sense, claiming GDs, Crips, whatever. You know what I'm saying? And ain't got no sense, man. And I had to survive through that.
You know, it shows a major thing in regards to how mass incarceration has victimized us, man, from being youth all the way up to adulthood, how they victimized us, right? You know, I know you. I remember we had a conversation. You were talking about how you were young, and you were getting in trouble because you were getting people tried to bully you because you self-prosecuted of poverty, right? You know, and that has a lot to do with certain things,
yeah.
Poverty and miseducation.
Exactly.
You know. So
yeah,
you basically defending yourself. You know what I'm saying? Started getting in, people started looking at you being a troublemaker because you were defending yourself, right?
Exactly. Cause see, when my dad, he ended up getting on drugs real bad. You know what I'm saying? So any little bit of money that my mom got, he stole it. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, she wasn't going to kick him out into the streets because one thing about my family, we real close. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, so my mom, she couldn't afford me, you know, the Jordans, or she couldn't even afford me things simple as Reeboks. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, a lot of my clothes that I had got came from my older cousin, you know, and, you know, people used to like joke and pick on my, you know, my clothes, and cause my mom really couldn't get my hair cut, or if she did have money put to the side for my haircut that weekend, my dad done stole it. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, people used to pick on me. So I was never good in, you know, cracking jokes. You know what I'm saying? So I became emotional. You know what I'm saying? And when I became emotional, I couldn't attack back verbally. So I attacked with fists. You know what I'm saying? And through that time period, man, I also, you know, developed a rap sheet at a young age because these kids' parents was taking out charges on me, man. You know what I'm saying? I was a kid, but I'm like, well, damn. Like, why you ain't stopping your kids from bullying, like, picking on me? You know what I'm saying? I'm minding my business. I'm going to school or to the store for my mom, whatever. But, you know, and as time went on, man, it was just more so, you know, that emotion of anger built up inside of me, man. It just stayed with me from my childhood. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people, even in my neighborhood today, a lot of people be like, you know, man, Skull, man, he can be a monster. You got some people say I'm a monster, then you got others that say, you know, I'm a lovable person until you make me a monster, you know. And it's just at the end of the day, man, it's like certain individuals that you may ask about me would be the same ones that tried to bully me when I was younger, you know what I'm saying? But when I got older, that, you know, the tables turned, you know what I'm saying? And, yeah, man, it built up a lot of anger within me, man, and I suffered from that. You know what I'm saying? I suffered from that. And, you know, as I got old, I recently got over that, like, in my mid-20s, man, because I had a problem. Like, I go out in public, and because I got picked on so much as a kid, I might go out in public and think, you know, people might be looking at me all crazy, like, but I know that was in my head. You know what I'm saying? And I sensed, you know, overcame that, but, you know, I used to have that feeling in me for a long time, for years. That affected me for years. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people didn't know that. They just looked at it like, man, that dude wild. Nah, man, I'm battling demons. I've been through a lot. I've seen a lot. You know what I'm saying? As, you know, from a kid coming up and being dramatized and bullied. You know what I'm saying? And then not only that, man, like, it ain't like I just started fighting back overnight. Because my mom, a strong black woman, you know, when dudes try to jump me and I run in the house, my mom make me go back outside and fight them. You know what I'm saying? She, nah, you go fight them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that stuck with me.
Yes, sir. As long as I know
a lot of people don't know the
hand battling kings, right? You know, they're saying it's more perspective on the state and they're oppressing everybody. Like, you know, I know you one of the founders of the civil organization, right? You know, and I heard you mention that you were conscious doing a lot of the time, but you still engaged in certain criminal mentalities and everything, right? You know, in regards to that, right, you know, by you being conscious in that situation, right, and you just saying you battled with demons. You know, in regards to other individuals, what type of influence do you have with other brothers that was in that? Was some of your brothers inspired to be 5%, or was some of your brothers inspired to be conscious? Or what actually was going on in regards to relationship with other brothers and sisters involved, you know, by being conscious already?
You come up with any Hidden Valley Kings?
Yeah.
Well, Hidden Valley Kings was like, told you, brother, I had a lot of, like, built-up anger. So Kings initially stood for Crucial Islamic Nubian Gods. You know,
okay.
The individual who actually started it, his name Korn, but he's returned to the essence. And he was originally from Chicago. And when he came from Chicago, we all became vice lords. You know what I'm saying? And I got locked up for, like I said, the charges that I had when I was a kid. So while I was locked up, the vice lords transitioned into the kings, you know, because Korn was like, I want to start something that we can be recognized for. I don't want to be up under nobody. I don't want to follow nobody. You know what I'm saying? And so he started the kings. And Korn was also had knowledge of self. You know what I'm saying? He was a 5%er. But, you know, like I said, I was incarcerated when we made the transition from vice lords to kings. When I got locked up, that's what I was, a vice lord. But, you know, like I said, the anger that I had built up in me, when I finally came home, I think, what, 96, you know, my mentality, even though I had knowledge of self, and I ain't gonna lie, comrade, I was out here being a devil, man. I was like a savage. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't, I mean, at times I'd try to drop jewels or whatnot, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, that comes from, you know, that wasn't right in the Zach. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't right in the Zach because I knew better, but at the same time, you know, I was leading these people, certain people, you know, down the wrong path. But you got to also understand, though, I'm only 18 years old, though. You see what I'm saying? I'm still a kid, you know, in many ways. So I'm still growing mentally. So, you know, when I came home at 18, I was like, you know, we're going to do the flip side of the kings, you know. And I had made it, I turned it into killing ignorant niggas gangster style on the flip side of Crucial Islamic Nubian Gods, you know. And so it was like, you know, the people that was actually, like, following behind me was more so on the gangster side of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I got locked up, comrade, it wasn't no large group. It was like eight, nine of us. You know what I'm saying? And nobody really had influence over the other individual. Anytime we wanted to, you know, come up with an idea and carry the idea out, we took a vote on it. You know what I'm saying? But over the years as it grew, you know, then, you know, I'm the one set up the rank structure. You know, I take sole responsibility for that because I did time. I done did my time for that. You know what I'm saying? But I came up with the rank structure, and I put that rank structure together. This is when I came home from the feds in 2003. You know what I'm saying? Now I'm conscious, and I'm older. I'm 25 now. You know what I'm saying? So now I'm trying to, you know, teach and educate, you know, the right way. You know what I'm saying? And you had, sadly, man, you had individuals within the organization that was just renegade. You know what I'm saying? They'll go out and they was doing things, man, and put my name on it. You know what I'm saying? And it was crazy because, to be honest, I didn't even know they was doing this until I just came home a couple of years ago, man, because I used to go out in public and dudes and guys would look at me kind of side where they wouldn't approach me, you know what I'm saying? But they would look at me crazy, like, and I ain't never understood that until I just came home recently, and they was telling me, like, man, so-and-so said, man, you gave him the order to come rob me. And I'm like, what? You know what I'm saying? So, and this happened on more than one occasion, comrade. So it made a lot of enemies for me without me even knowing that, you know, I had enemies. Because I was doing one thing as far as trying to teach and push, you know, the Nation of Gods and Herbs and giving brothers knowledge of self. This was in the mid-2000s. But but I ain't going to lie, I was still in the streets, though. You know what I'm saying? But I was still trying to do something, you know, productive. You know what I'm saying? But these other individuals that were renegades, man, they went out and was just doing renegade stuff and putting my name in it. And that's how they ended up, you know, pretty much said I was the leader of the Hidden Valley King because, comrade, to be honest, like, it wasn't as far as, like, the charges that they gave us, it wasn't like how the media tried, gangland and all that tried to present it. Like, it wasn't no lot of drugs involved in this conspiracy. Like, my charge was what they call foreseeability. My foreseeability, comrade, was 50 grams of crack. That's what I was charged with. You see what I'm saying? 50 grams of crack. So
yeah,
it wasn't no large quantities of drugs, but in these magazines and all this, they got me labeled a kingpin. I was never no kingpin. You know what I'm saying? I was a gangster. I take that title at one time. Yeah, I was that. But I wasn't no, you know, kingpin. I was a street hustler, bro. You know, but I was trying to, like, you know, be... I had 2 feet. I had one in the streets and the other one, like, you know, on the conscious level because I'm trying to leave the streets. But at the time that I'm trying to leave, this is when, you know, I get caught up and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? And when I did the time for this, I just got out of on.
Okay. No, I know you had mentioned, you know what I'm saying, that you, you know what I'm saying, for conversation that you got a book on the way, book series and documentary thing, you know what I'm saying, just to tell your life story, what it can inspire individuals, right? It was a beautiful thing, right? You know, those are very important stories in regards to how individual trained from the criminal territory can be tied by example, right? That's what the youth need, man.
Yeah.
You know, and I also understand that you are, like you said, been doing things in the community. You know, you've been engaged into Black August activities, you know, passing out Black August T-shirts and pushing WNO the mentorship program, right? You know, for an individual that been through that, you know what I'm saying, what type of success have you had with the people in your community? You know, how do they look at you now? Like people who knew you when you were young to before you got incarcerated, how do they look at you now? What type of influence do you have over them now? You know what I'm saying? How do they view you as a person?
Now, like, the people that was around me back then is no longer around me. I mean, we cool, you know what I'm saying? But I'm no longer around them people like I was, you know, before I went in. And they really can't view me because I don't deal with them. But it is a couple individuals that I do allow come around me and I go around, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, they still look at me as, you know, Roscoe, but they also know that I'm no longer in the streets. You know what I'm saying? I still got my swag. Yeah. I still carry myself like a street guy, but I'm not. I don't indulge in street activity. You know. What I do is I like when I get around these individuals. You know, I always try to bring up, you know, anything dealing with, you know, Brother George or anything dealing with the prison movement, even the comrades that's locked down now, those who fought, you know, during the hunger strike to get out of the situation that they was in, you know, being held down for their political views and whatnot. You know, I teach that amongst the people that's around at the time, no matter what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? If I'm at a cookout, they go tell you, man, Roscoe, you know, he go talk with us, you know, on a normal level, but then before he go drop some jewel, you know, like I said, with the book, like you mentioned earlier, you know, we're making it into a 4-5 book series because, you know, my life is kind of complicated, you know what I'm saying? And I've been through a lot from a child up until, you know, I got recently released. So we're making it into a 4-5 book series and hoping that it actually land on Netflix. That's just what my publisher is pushing for, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, the book will show you how I transitioned from, you know, a gangster mentality into, you know, a revolutionary mentality and embracing, you know, my identity as a new African, you know what I'm saying? And it'll show you the transition, you know. But as you read the book in its beginning stage, I'm giving you me when I was in my unconscious state. You know what I'm saying? So the words is going to be basic words. You know what I'm saying? But as you get more into the book, you will see the words and the vocabulary changing. into the book, because you'll see me slowly, my conscious level is rising, you know. Got the W.L. Nola Mentorship Program, which is, you know, designed to help the community understand, you know, the true essence and what the prison movement stands for. Also, you know, to build political classes to teach the youth, you know, why they oppress, you know what I'm saying, how to come up out of that oppressive stage. Also, we in the process of starting a movement called Stop the Violence, into where we got a few black churches that's going to be backing us up. And the lady, she actually want me to be the face of the movement. You know what I'm saying? They go handle everything, and I just, you know, go around and speak to the youth, you know, as far as my experience as a gang member, and try to, you know, deter them away from that element and that lifestyle, you know. But, yeah, that's about it, all I got right now so far.
Okay. Okay, that's a beautiful thing, man. I actually want to open the line up for a couple of questions, you know what I'm saying, right quick, man. Let a couple people ask you a question, man. I'm going to open the line up right quick. Okay. 704-967, you got a question, comment, statement, please, so your line is open. 704-967, your line is open.
Okay, I rather now. I know, like, far as your childhood or whatever, you did go through a lot. Now, is there anything that you regret and that you're doing different now?
Anything I regret?
Anything that you regret?
I don't regret nothing. Like my childhood, I don't regret nothing from my childhood. My childhood was like with my parents. Like my parents loved me unconditionally. It was just that they just wasn't financially, you know, well off. You know, that's not their fault, you know. But as far as love, I was loved unconditionally, you know. But also, I learned a lot about the streets by being with my father. You know what I'm saying? Because my father, you know, he was a street guy. He was, you know, he was a gangster. And I seen him in action. And I watched, you know what I'm saying, because he kept me with him. But at my childhood, nah, I never regret my childhood. But, you know, I never really had a childhood. I've been incarcerated. You see what I'm saying? So I can't really say I had a child, honestly say I had a childhood. Like, I got two sisters that, you know, I really didn't really get the chance to get to know, because I was always doing time. I was always, you know, locked up. So I grew up institutionalized. You know what I'm saying? That was my childhood, you know.
Now that you're on a straight path, like far as getting your life together, leaving the streets alone, is there, like, far as do you want, I mean, like, how can I put this? You want to, I know you say you want to reach out to the youth. So how, I mean, what are you going to do to far as to get that? Like, I heard you say that you have to talk to their big homie. And so how would you approach that big homie, like far as, yo, I mean, because I'm going to tell you,
Hello? I can't hear you, so what'd you say?
I think she said, how would I go about approaching a big homie?
Yeah, then she said something else. It went out, in and out. You see it else, folks?
Yeah, I'm here. Like, far as the big homie, okay. Because, you know, Charlotte, these people, I mean, like, you see people dying every day. And if a person feel like they're being disrespected, far as you come and trying to teach them, I mean, how would you go about reaching out to the big homie without it escalating to a higher level? And I know that you're not in the streets anymore, but you still have respect out here. But at the same time, you have respect for the older crowd. The younger crowd may not know you as well as the older crowd do, and so they know what you're really about.
See, that's only like, that hasn't been in, you know, street organizations wouldn't understand. Like, when you part of a was part of a street organization, it's history. You know, like, when I was, you know, representing, well, first let me answer the first question as far as how I'm able to, you know, talk to their big homies and reach their big homies, you know, and for one, they already know who I am, you know, so just by them knowing who I am, they might not know who I am by face, but once I tell them the name, they know who I am. And after that, they pretty much, you know, out of respect, they listen. Now, as far as them being grown men or having the mindset of feeling like they grown, they go do what they want to do. But at the end of the day, I'm going to do my part as far as telling them what they doing. It ain't no future in it. You know what I'm saying? Because I've been doing it all my life, and I always ended up locked up. And I can honestly say, literally, that I've lost over 40-something friends, close friends, not just friends like, hey, I'm talking about guys I spent the night with when we was kids growing up. So, you know, the youth, when you in the street, when you was part of street organizations, they have history. You know, every time I went to prison for long stretches, 5 years, 6 years, I was able to come back into my community because of the history. You see what I'm saying? The big homies go always be acknowledged if they doing something for that organization. You see what I'm saying? Your name go down in history. So I can come at 70, 80 years old, you know, 4, 5 generations down, and they go know who I am because I made history within that organization. You see what I'm saying? My name stands out. You know, that's like if you take individuals like Tookie Williams, and other individuals, I don't want to name because they're still living, but you take certain individuals that was, you know, there from the beginning, and then several decades later, they still embrace because of who they are and what they brought to that organization, whether it's positive or negative. Whatever they praise at that time, they recognize. So when I go out into these streets and talk to, you know, these OGs, they already know who I am. They respect me because, for one, they know I'm not a rat. For two, they know I got down. And for three, they know I made a transition, but I still carry myself like a street dude, and I don't approach them with no, you know, not to knock the religious people, but I don't approach them, you know, with the suit and tie, you know, preaching to them like I'm a minister or things of that nature. I come to them raw. I come to them in a language. You know what I'm saying? I use the profane language. You know what I'm saying? I talk to them street. You know what I'm saying? And I grab a blunt, smoke with them, drink with them, chop it up with them. You know what I'm saying? And when I leave, I leave. But I leave them with a jewel. You know what I'm saying? And every time they see me in public, they give me a head nod. Or they, big homie, let me holler at you. You know what I'm saying? Whether they're Blood, Crip, GD, Vice Lord, King, they call me big homie. You know what I'm saying? I'm not even in their organization, but they still acknowledge me as their big homie. You know what I'm saying? And that says a lot, you know. And a lot of people say, well, man, these young dudes don't listen to nobody. They listen to somebody. They just don't listen to you because they don't respect you. You got to get their respect before they listen to you. You see what I'm saying? I got their respect because I give them respect. You see what I'm saying? Even though I know I got a heavy name out here and I was known as a heavy hitter as far as, you know, with the gunplay, when I approach them, I still approach them humbly. I don't approach them on no gangster stuff. You know what I'm saying? I approach them like, you know, a humble man. You know what I'm saying? And they respect that. And it's just simple. It ain't hard, sister.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we appreciate you calling in, so we appreciate that, sister. We appreciate you calling in. Okay. Okay. Yeah, you got enough time for more questions, brother, or you got to wrap it up, man. You know what? Hold up. Matter of fact, I got somebody on another line. I want to ask a question, man. Hold me line up right quick.
248-303. Your line is open. You got a question, comment, statement. We do it at the time. 248-303. Your line is open. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is MJ from Detroit.
Okay.
I just wanted to make a comment. I've been listening to the brother's story and everything, and I heard the lady's question who he was just responding to, and I just wanted to tell him thank you. Thank you for, you know, speaking on behalf of the youth that's out here, because she asked you, was there anything that you regret? And I love the way that the brother answered that question, because if it wasn't for brothers like himself, George, you know, Jonathan Jackson, et cetera, if it wasn't for those brothers who realized what their purpose was, you know what I'm saying, that it got them, that it made them who they are. You know, because, like, I can hear, like, when she was asking the question in the way the brother answered it, you know, and, like, he said something that stood out. You know, he said that the youth may not listen to a particular person because they don't respect them. He said that he comes to them in their language. And I could say that's how I came into consciousness. You know, a brother, you know, was able to speak in my language, you know, because I can be proper. You know, the youth can be proper if they want to. They can listen and straighten up if they want to. But, you know, they see something else that's more befitting of them right now. And they don't see the long term effects of that. So when you got a brother like him, you know, stepping to them and preaching the knowledge or whatever what they need to hear, he's giving them the choice. Like, look, you either take this route or take that route, you know. And it's leaving it in their hands, and it's no judgment. And you know, and like I even see that within the movement, you know, like, even within the movement, people have separatist ideas, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, you know what, I'll just say this, and I'm gonna wrap it up, I'm sorry, but, you know, I heard a sister say, you know, she's supposed to be for the people and all of this, but I heard her say something, she fell out with another sister, you know, oh, you a Section 8 bitch, you know what I'm saying, old bum-ass government bitch, you know, and it's just like that type of attitude. So it's just like, why would anybody out on the street, you know, respect somebody like that, you know what I'm saying, because everybody ain't out here getting it illegal like that. So what about the brothers and sisters, you know what I'm saying, that see what's going on, but they might not financially, you know what I'm saying, be able to contribute to the movement and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, and I'm glad he answered the question like that, because we need to get that shit in check too. You know what I'm saying? Not everybody coming financially sound, because he even said that about his parents. You know, it might not have been his parents' fault, but they still had the love. You know what I'm saying? And that's important. You know what I'm saying? And we just need to meet people at their level. You know what I'm saying? Because ain't nobody better than no one. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nobody above anything. So we need to, you know, the brother, his whole attitude in coming to the youth and people out here on the streets, that's what we need to adopt, because we meet people at a level. You know what I'm saying? So success to you may not be success to the next person. And that's the attitude that we need to adopt. So I just wanted to give a brother his props, you know what I'm saying, because people like me that's out here, you know what I'm saying, like I said, I could be proper and business, like suit and tie if I want to, but, you know, me, you know, speaking, cussing and all of that shit, or, you know, being able to relate to my people, you know what I'm saying, on that level, sometimes it's like a venting type thing, you know what I'm saying, because that's just something we've been so used to, but that's not what I want to be the end all, you know, be the all in all end all, especially for my children. So yeah, it's just respect to the brother and how he answered the lady's previous question and all of that.
Thank you, sister.
Okay, we appreciate you calling in. So we appreciate that. Okay. Do you have anything else, sister? That's it.
Oh, that's it. I'm trying to get out the queue.
Okay, I got you. I guess. Okay. Brother, I got one more question for you, man. What does your name mean? Kamal Asghar. What does that mean? What is the significance of that?
Well, Kamal means quiet warrior. You know, and a comrade gave me that name because when I was in prison, I was always quiet, unless I was teaching, you know, the younger guys that was coming in, you know, but I was a soldier. Anytime, you know, I was on the front line, whenever it was time to be on the front line, so they gave me the name Kamal Asghari. Asghari means soldier in Swahili, you know what I'm saying? Kamal means quiet warrior in Swahili. They both basically the same thing, you know what I'm saying? So that lets you know. Two different comrades gave me these names. You know, one comrade gave me Kamau and another comrade gave me Asghari. So that let you know how much I was soldiering behind them penitentiary walls, behind them enemy lines. You know what I'm saying? For two different comrades to give me a name, you know, that basically almost, you know, is the same thing.
I appreciate it, brother. I got another person want to call in. Let me open the line all right quick. 704-492, your line up. You got a question, comment, statement. Please do so at your time. Your line up 704-492. Go ahead.
This is Tanisha in Charlotte. Peace. I wanted to touch
okay,
in and enjoy the show and enjoy hearing the discussion and comrade's story. And I just wanted to just kind of commend him as well, especially for focusing, I guess, and targeting on the youth. You know, that's, I believe that is where, you know, a lot of the key to our work is with the youth. And just want to kind of recommit. I know we've been missing each other and, you know, dates and work and all that, you know, to set up actually being able to sit down and discuss, you know, some work in Charlotte. But I just want to kind of just recommit on the line, you know, on live that, you know, I'm here, I'm willing to soldier with you and shit, go to door-to-door if we need to. We've touched down a few times over in the west side of Charlotte and, you know, Malcolm X Day. We actually created a no-cop zone out there because the brother in Philly that does the Black Community Control of Police had given us some documents and things at the time for a case we was following and created a no-cop zone over there. And the youth and even the elders that was on the ground there just, you know, loved it. Like, you know, what does this mean? And the police can't come through here right now? Like, I'm like, no, we politicizing right now. We got us right now. You know, and when the police did come through, you know, there's a sign that said no cop zone. They was waving a sign at them. You know what I mean? Like, we got it. Leave. We got us over here right now. You know what I mean? So there is an energy for this work that the youth are just sponges. You know what I mean? Just wanting, and they need leaders like yourself in the community to step up, like the sister just said, on their level, you know, and coming at them with what they can understand. And what I found and just in being in the work and touchdown in the streets is that, you know, the people recognize state shit. You know what I mean? So when we come as the people and with the politics that is of the people, it's usually respected. There, I haven't been out and had an issue with disrespect, you know what I mean, ever. They want it. You know what I mean? They're hungry for it. So, you know, I just applaud you and salute you. And like I said, just wanted to recommit that I'm here and I'll, you know, get down with you whenever we can connect.
Okay. Thanks a lot, sister. I really appreciated that. Bomani.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm here, Conrad.
Oh, is there anything else?
No. You have anything else to say, sir?
No, that's it. I'm still, you know, I'm still listening. I'll hang on the line, but I'm driving, you know, down these country roads, so I'm just trying to pay attention to driving as well. But, you know, I'm here, you know, like I said, connected as soon as possible.
Okay. Yeah, brother. No, that ain't it, man. You actually can
you want to share any kind of information, how to contact you, or how to get involved, there'll be no mission program, or how to get involved, stop the violence, or, you know, or how somebody get in time with you for public speaking or whatever it may be, right? You can leave the information and also give your final thought at this time.
All right. Well, basically, it's simple as far as reaching me. I'm a basic guy. You can reach me on Facebook just under Scoe Able, like S-C-O-E-A-B-E-L-L. If you send a friend request now, I accept it if it don't have that many mutual friends, because I know you did it because I requested it on the show. But after a few days, because I don't accept friend requests if the mutual friends, but it's not that many mutual friends. Also, I don't mind putting my number out on the show. You can reach me at 980-226-3187. And I discuss anything as far as dealing with the W.L. Nola Mentorship Program, the Black August Memorial. Also, we can discuss, I can break down as far as what we're going to be doing this summer as far as with Black August. For those who want to participate, just give me a call or reach out to me on Facebook. And those who want to be part of the movement or Stop the Violence, you know, just let me know. And I just want to try to bring something positive to the city because, you know, the way Gangland depicted me, they depicted me as a monster, you know, but they did that in order to get a conviction, you know. So since they did it that way, I want to be known as, you know, someone doing something positive for the community. Not only the community, but I want to, you know, transcend it to all new African communities within the city. You know, but start with my community first. Well, actually, my household first, and then my community, you know what I'm saying, and then venture out into other communities, you know, because, you know, my neighborhood, man, it's a beautiful neighborhood, you know, and I just want to be able to try to, you know, bring something constructive and something productive to that community, you know, and those who are on board as far as, you know, helping me spread the new African ideology, and, you know, to help me to try to stop these youths from gangbanging. Because one of the things, you know, these youths don't have no rec centers to actually go to. It's like they've been tearing down all the rec centers in all the urban communities, man. And, you know, these youths, they don't really have nothing to channel the energy towards. Because I know when I was young, you know, when I was bored, I used to get in trouble just because I was bored. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we got to try to, you know, come together and you know, build these rec centers for these children, man, and, you know, boxing centers, you know, and I want to work with other individuals. One of my partners, well, actually it's his younger brother, you know, try to get it to the point where I'm going to get with him as far as, cause he got a boxing class, a boxing school, and I want to try to get, like, you know, the youth when, you know, they beefing or whatnot to put the guns down, and if you really a man, come down here and, you know, put the boxing gloves on and y'all slug it out. You know what I'm saying? But if you that mad and don't want the boxing gloves, then you can slug it out with your fist. You know what I'm saying? Anything besides the guns, man, just put the guns down.
You got anything else, man? That's it, brother? You got anything else to say?
No, I'm good, Conrad.
Okay. Again, I want to thank you for the work you're doing in the past, present, and the future. I don't think you're coming to the Bronx, and I was going to understand. If you got anyone had any comrades, associate, loved ones, relatives, or friends behind enemy line, you're looking to our website, which is www.georgiauniversity.com. Again, it's www.georgiauniversity.com. Long live the resistance, long live your African independent move. Free the land.